Having a bad day? Give us a call and we'll give you something to complain about. 905-338-1250.
All right, everybody sing now. I know you know the words. Glory, glory, Tottenham Hotspurs. Seriously, who starts an interview like this? Who does that? Folks, our next guest, he's been on before. He'll be on again, hopefully. He's one of my favorites. You know, I didn't always like him, but boy, I like him now. I'm not sure why. Mr. Michael Korn, a broadcaster, columnist, author of a new book called Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread About Christianity. There's no point talking anymore about this guy because he'll cover it all himself. Mr. Michael Korn on The Drew Marshall Show. How are you, Michael?
I have never had such a wonderful introduction to an interview. We should explain to people that I'm a passionate Tottenham fan, and as we speak, of course, there's a huge game going on, because if Chelsea are playing Bayern Munich, it all gets a bit complicated, but as long as Chelsea lose, then Tottenham get in the Champions League. But I digress. Carry on.
You do digress. Oh my goodness. Is it frustrating for you, the apathy in regards to the league that you love, the sport that you love, the real game of football? Is it, you know, the apathy that's over here in especially in America, but in North America?
Well, when Manchester United played Manchester City about 5 weeks ago, the television audience was 600 million. Hmm. And it really puts baseball and American football and hockey into perspective. And the European Championships that are starting in about, a month or two, you will have more than a billion people watching. Canada, actually, soccer is very big. The United States, it is too. You'd be amazed how big it is down there. But obviously, you're never going to compete with
hockey,
football, and baseball.
Hockey.
Well, hockey, I mean,
hockey.
I think soccer will be bigger than hockey in the U.S. It probably is now, in fact.
Yeah.
But up here, no, it'll never defeat hockey up here.
Michael, do you really believe that Christianity is the most abused faith on earth, according to the National Post headline? Do you really, really, really believe that?
Yeah, it's not really, of course, for me to say whether I believe it. It's like, do you believe two and two are four? Objective non-Christian organizations have studied this in depth, and what they have said is, yes, Christianity is the most persecuted religion on the face of the earth. I mean, there's no one to compete, because if you look at what's going on in the Islamic world right now, in the communist world, it's absolute hell. I mean, you know, Christians, you want to weep, really, because take, for example, Iraq, one of the few spots in the Middle East under that monster Saddam where they weren't actually persecuted. Americans liberated Iraq. Persecution begins under Islamic fundamentalism. They flee to Syria. Now another monster, Assad, is in trouble, and they're being persecuted again. They're going to flee to Jordan. Who knows what will happen there if the royal family... So it's terrible for Christians throughout the Islamic world, not just the Middle East, Pakistan as well, and so on, and in China and in North Korea. And even in the West, there is... It's not the tangible persecution, but we're marginalized, we're mocked. I mean, if I showed you my inbox every day, the abuse and the death threats, and darling, if you're going to threaten to kill me, at least know how to use the apostrophe.
You're going to kill me with an overuse of the comma or something. The king, you know, actually, sorry, I just reminded of Conrad Black. Is he not the king of run-on sentences, the king of the comma? My goodness.
He has a great way with words, does Conrad. I'm very glad he's out of prison, by the way.
Yes, as am I. Well, actually, I don't care that much. Okay, listen. Who cares if Jesus people aren't being, like, as Jesus people, if we're not being treated fairly, who cares? That's actually prophetic. It's supposed to, you know, kind of go down this way. So who cares?
By the way, have we yet mentioned the title of the book?
Yes, I did. Hold on. In your intro, it was right there. Broadcaster, columnist, author of Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread About Christianity. And I plan on doing it three more times.
Good man. Was that Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread About Christianity? Yes. Amazon.ca. Well,
wow.
No, actually, you asked a really good question here, because where Christians are not meant to moan about persecution.
No.
But look, I've said this before. I want to die at the age of 95 in bed, surrounded by chocolate, and I really don't want to be a martyr. However, we have to be open to martyrdom and persecution, but at the same time, we have to stand up for truth. I don't mind being attacked for what I believe. I do resent being attacked for what I don't believe. And you see this, for example, over the marriage issue. Now, Obama comes forward and says, well, the golden rule. First of all, his children advised him. Then it was apparently the golden rule that led him to say yes to same-sex marriage. And if we dare to say, I mean, I tell you my position, gay people should be treated with love, equality, respect, never denied a home or a place to live, a job for their sexuality. But marriage is one man and one woman. That apparently makes me a filthy Christian bigot who has to die, according to so many people who write to me.
Hmm. Does it get frustrating? Like, I don't know if you like wearing the moniker of antagonist or if you get tired of that yourself. You've made a living off it, but doesn't it get tired, man?
I don't regard myself as being. I mean, I think my views actually are very centrist, and you know, just a few years ago they would have been considered thus, but I believe the culture has moved a great deal. I mean, I want a quiet life, but I have four children. I can see the society they're growing up in, and I mean, today, honestly, mate, you go to high schools, and teachers, really people of goodwill, trying their best, but they're often dealing with kids who are promiscuous at the age of 14, they're cutting themselves, they're using drugs way past cannabis, by the way, at the age of 14 and 15. You have a culture that says do anything when you want to do it. God is cursed and abused on a daily basis. If I can't be antagonistic to that, then what's the point of saying I'm a follower of Christ?
Folks, on the phone with Michael Corin, who wrote a book, I can't remember the title, what was it called?
Oh, I think it was Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread About Christianity.
Right.
Good $17.63 plus free shipping.
Oh,
that'll be the paperback.
Andy, you know, you're compared to me, you're a newer Jesus guy, although you're better at it than I am.
No, don't be silly.
No, he is. He's got a stronger faith than I do. I've been struggling a bit lately. So,
But you know what, Drew? We all struggle. I mean, there are those people who don't, but I meet people all the time. I think I'm finding it very hard to like you. I find it very hard sometimes not to lose my temper. You know, there are people I know who just walk around on a cloud of love. That's not me. I'm a very broken person with a lot of sin, but I know what the truth is, and I'm trying to follow it.
Every single day, for me, it's a bit of a struggle, Michael. It's Andy here, and you know you're supposed to act a certain way, and yet you get frustrated with your kids or your dog. And I know every day it's like I'm supposed to be doing this, and it's almost like a constant environment of almost guilt around you.
Right, but does this stuff help? The stuff that's in Michael's book, I can't remember the name of it, does it help? Does it help you with this daily struggle? Knowing the apologetic reasons and answers, does that help you like love your dog more?
I think it helps, but it doesn't help you unless you start taking action. It's like it's like doing the same things and expecting a different result.
Right.
And so it's a frustration from I should be living better. I should be teaching other people. I should be witnessing more. But it does help from when
we
get into
discussions.
You
sound like an evangelical.
I'm trying.
Man. Yeah. Michael, what do you have to say about that, Mr. Catholic man? By the way, well done in the last book. Boy, did that take off. Hokey jumping.
Thank goodness I got four kids and they eat a lot and they're all going to university. we're not all cut out to be defending the Christian faith in the public square. I mean, that would be awful if we were. But I think if we know our faith better, then it's easier to live that faith. And just truth in itself, anything that is good and true must be pleasing to God. So if we are talking about truth, that has to be the right thing. And I think it does help a lot of people, even if they don't respond to argument, that they understand, you know, some of the things in the book, we hear this all the time. Hitler was a Christian. You know, Christians are obsessed with abortion. Christians are stupid. Christians are frightened of science and progress. Jesus didn't exist. So, you know, these are some of them. If people can actually say, hey, you know, I read this book and that's not true. There's loads of evidence that Jesus existed. And Hitler was horribly anti-Christian. And we're not obsessed with abortion. We just care about unborn life. And they can just read some of the responses. I think it will help. I certainly don't think it'll do any harm. put it that way.
So if you were to have the platform at the Tea Party convention, what would you say to them?
The Tea Party convention?
Yeah.
If you're invited as a guest speaker.
Yeah,
there.
No, really. What would Michael Corn say to, you know, the sort of the ultra-right-wing, you know, and in that group is a ton of fundamentalist evangelical folks.
Well, there are. There are all sorts of people in the Tea Party. I mean, I don't know American politics that well, but I think the Tea Party is horribly abused by people simply for having a different point of view. The very center of Christianity has to be love. Now, that doesn't mean just going around hugging people and being all gooey, because love does involve truth and righteousness, but there can be no compromise on that. I'm not going to dictate anyone's politics to them. I don't look right or left. I look up. I mean, I've used that line before, but I really do mean it, because once you ally yourself to a partisan group, to a party, you can be in real trouble. But love and understanding of the scriptures, understanding of God, centering your life around prayer. You mentioned guilt earlier. I don't think guilt, but constant gratitude that we have been given this answer, this way to find eternal life. I mean, that shouldn't provoke guilt or shame, but we should understand that our smallness. I mean, God has actually done that for us. I mean, we don't believe in karma. We don't believe in getting what you deserve. We believe in grace, which is really getting what you don't deserve.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I want to compare sort of two, I guess, camps of apologists, because really this book does fall into an apologetic category.
Yeah.
You know, let's compare the Catholic apologist, maybe the Muggeridge, we'll throw that name in there, versus, say, someone like a Ray Comfort, the evangelical apologist, maybe Dobson you throw in there as well or whatever. How would you describe succinctly the difference between Catholic apologetics and evangelical apologetics?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think for the longest time, Catholic apologetics was left to clergy, and that wasn't the right thing. That all changed in the 60s. For me, though, it's not so much the different denomination, it's a different style. And the people of it, well, the man who's influenced me most by a mile is C.S. Lewis. I could never be as tall as him, but I can stand on his shoulders. You know, I dedicated the book to Walter Hooper.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Who's Walter Hooper?
Walter Hooper was Lewis's last secretary and close friend at the end of his life, and Walter's become a very close friend of myself and our family, which is one of the joys of my life. He's a wonderful man. He lives in Oxford, and we see him every year. And just a marvelous man to know, and to know Lewis through him as well. But it begin with Lewis, and then people like both Catholic and evangelical, often British. I would say people like Nicky Gumbel, who is a friend, who I think is great, the Alpha Course, Michael Green, the late David Watson, I would say, and on the other side, people like Scott Hahn and Carl Keating and Patrick Madrid. Some of the others you mentioned, Ravi Zacharias, who gave me a blurb years ago, which I used on this book. He probably forgot he gave it to me. But I mean, you know, Ravi is such a gentle man and a gentleman and so good, so compelling in what he says. There are different ways to respond, and it can be very difficult sometimes to be even about all this, because some of the, particularly from contemporary atheists, some of the venom, some of the viciousness is quite incredible. And you have to be able to soak it up and then respond. But frankly, that's not always easy.
Folks, Michael Corn on the line with us. He is the author of this book called Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread About Christianity, or as they said on 100 Huntley Street a couple of times, Lies They Spread About Christianity, forgetting the word 10. Why those 10? And some, I guess, I've looked at, you know, a couple of them and said, wow, I mean, of all the 10 things to pick, I mean, and how did you end up with the Da Vinci Code as being, you know, a whole chapter? Was it hard narrowing them down to 10?
It's interesting. It really is interesting you say that, because, you know, I've done a load of media on this, and the best interviews, and by the way, this is becoming one of them, all the guys have said, why did you include the Da Vinci Code? So, I mean, maybe I've made a mistake in that, but the reason I did, and it's the shortest chapter in the book, I think, is I just wanted to make sure that people knew once and for all that the rubbish that is written in the Da Vinci Code and all of the hundreds of replicas of it that have been published since to try and make money, they're not true. You know, Gnostic Gospels and what did Jesus really say, and were there various women around, and was he married? I mean, it's not so much the novel, it's this, there's an alternative truth, there's an alternative story, an alternative narrative. No, there isn't. It's the Christian story. Don't have to believe it, but there's no other one. That's all you're being offered in terms of Christ. But the others, in my experience on talk radio and TV and columns, these are the ones I have encountered most frequently. You know, I begin with Jesus didn't exist, and then bad things happening to good people and that sort of philosophy. Then Hitler was a Christian, Nazis were Christian, Christians supported slavery.
He's so good at promoting his book. He's so good at this.
No, I'm just going through why, though. I mean,
yeah, but I want to go through those. That's my job, man.
But I mean, it does seem to... Do you know what? I didn't even have to think that hard about them. It just seemed obvious. There are loads more.
Yeah.
But I think if you ask most people out there, the ones they hear most often would probably be covered in them. What I tried to avoid was being too divisive within Christianity. So I haven't discussed evolution. There's a whole range of views on evolution, within Christianity. We have to believe in intelligent design. But beyond that, I think within the pale of orthodoxy, there's a whole variety of views. I haven't spoken about issues such as Mary and some of the Catholic dogmas. That's not for this book. I would hope that any serious Christian, evangelical, Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, those still left in the Anglican and the United and Presbyterian Lutheran churches. And there are many, but they're struggling. You know, it's hard for them. But all of those people would read this book and feel included.
You are cheeky. Andy, you're chomping over there.
I was just thumbs up on the whole Da Vinci Code thing, because I find pop culture is one of the biggest roadblocks for a lot of people. Something like the Da Vinci Code, which spreads all kinds of falsehoods.
Mm.
For me, way back in the day, as a grade 6 person watching... it was Inherit the Wind. It was a movie from way back, and I think Gregory Peck or one of those guys was in that, but it just basically painted the guy who's defending Christianity as a complete moron, and the person that
And that affected you?
It was huge roadblock for my faith, way back when, because of the fact that they just painted, you know, how could anyone be so idiotic as to believe this, and the guy who believed in evolution, and he just ran circles around him logically, so to speak, from Monty Python.
I guess the Scopes trial must have really done you in.
Well, that's what the movie was all about. It was Inherit the Wind was the Scopes trial.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I'm just saying that pop culture and some of these things that get placed out there are really, they can really affect young minds and older minds as well.
They can. And by the way, that trial, the lawyer who defended traditional Christian teaching was one of the most brilliant and gifted lawyers of his generation. And some of those people who were defending traditional Christian teaching were the very people who initiated the civil rights movement. Remember, Martin Luther King died certainly a Christian minister and also a Republican and a conservative. But if you look at not some, but most of the great intellectual and scientific breakthroughs, it's been at the hands of Christians. But you're quite right. Popular culture. I was doing radio the other day. Actually, you tweeted me about it, or emailed Drew about it with John Moore.
Yes.
John Moore's a great guy. But John said to me, he said, look, a new survey says that the vast majority, 85% or something, of kids between 15 and 25, I'm not sure the exact details, when you mention Christianity, the first thing they say is anti-gay. Are you surprised? And he thought I'd say, oh, my God. And I said, no. In fact, I'm surprised it's not higher. You've got billions of dollars going into Hollywood and media and entertainment telling people this. So, of course, that's what kids believe. I had barely heard the gay issue mentioned within the Christian community until there was a push for same-sex marriage. At that point, we had to respond. When we respond, then we're being accused of being obsessed with the issue.
Mm. All right, well, who would you rather go two rounds in the ring with, Dan Brown or Dan Savage?
I think, you know, either will be pretty easy. Dan Brown just runs away from these issues. Dan Savage is the man who began the It Gets Better campaign. He writes about very sort of perverse sex. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. He's a very disturbed young fella, I think, or fella. And he was the one who was, he said the gay bullying was terrible. Bullying is terrible. Bullying. And the vast majority of kids who are bullied at school, it has nothing to do with sexuality. It's to do with body image, generally because they're overweight. Yeah. But he began this campaign. He was then speaking to hundreds, maybe thousands even, of kids, sort of captive audience, teenagers at a student journalism conference, where completely out of context, he began to call the Bible BS and scream and shout and say the Bible was a handbook for slavery. When some of these kids quietly left, because they didn't want to hear this nonsense, he began to scream and abuse them and call them names. This is a man who says, it gets better, bullying will stop. Dan, it does get better when gay bullies like you stop bullying people who believe in Christ.
All right, look, the reality is when it comes to this apologetic stuff, is there's so much information out there, and there's not enough time, and to be honest, nor desire, for the average Joe to study apologetics. So what would you say? What does Michael Korn say is the bare minimum that they need to hook into?
Well, that's very good because, look, we're paying bills. We're raising kids. We're too tired at the end of the day.
Yes. If
there's any one book, it would be C.S. Lewis' Mere Christianity. It's not that easy. It's not difficult. It may be a little challenging for some people, but not particularly. There's a lot of American Christian writers in the past 20, 25 years. Yeah, they're pretty good, but I'd certainly go to Lewis. But what I've tried to do in this one is almost, I suppose, bring together very eclectic the arguments from some of the other books, but not just apologetics, also just historical and political as well. The bare minimum, certainly if you can, the amount of time people spend reading novels aren't that great, or they spend reading a newspaper and they barely even look at the article. If they could devote that time just to reading some books of basic, very accessible apologetics, even in the car, playing a CD, of someone who's quite good, it would help a great deal. I think they'd really feel the presence of Christ. He does want us to be able to defend him in the public square.
Well, you struggled answering that, and I'll give you the stinking answer. The answer is Michael Korn's book, Heresy, 10 Lies They Spread about Christianity. Honestly, you have done... See, we're in a bite-sized culture, and you've taken a ginormous arena of apologetics and information and done a great job of throwing it in the dryer and shrinking it down so we can get it. Well done.
Well, you're very kind. I mean, even my lack of humility had borders, so I didn't want to say my book, but I am proud. I mean, I've written a whole bunch of books, and some I'm proud of, some, to be honest, I'm indifferent to. I thought my biographies of Lewis and Tolkien were pretty good introductions, this stuff, yeah, I got it. I really think I got it right here. It's not the last word, a million miles from being the last word.
Yeah.
But I think it's an important word.
Okay, Christians are stupid, blah, blah, blah. I was trying to find this prior to starting the show today, and I couldn't find it. I remember seeing an article in the Huffington Post about, it was something like conservatives they like simple thinking. They like it to be summarized into a bite-sized, tell me what to believe kind of a deal. Do you remember that article? Did you come across that at all?
Yeah, and there's some sort of scientific survey about the size of brain. I mean, it's so laughable. I mentioned that the marriage issue earlier. You know, the Christian argument is that marriage is not a civil right or a human right. It's a social institution. It must be child-centered. The norm must be the possibility of procreation. Children should have both a male and female role model whenever possible. So, slightly complex, whereas the other side is, I want to get married. Now, who are the clever ones and who are the stupid ones?
That's pretty funny.
There is intelligence and stupidity on both sides. I've met clever atheists and stupid atheists, and the same for Christians. Yeah. It comes down to faith in the end, but it's part of the game they play. How can we attack Christians? Look, we're coming at them at every side, and one new campaign will be, let's say they're stupid. Where it does really succeed, which is tragic, is at university, because kids go to university, particularly if they come maybe from Christian schools and so on, and suddenly they're exposed to all this sort of thing, including academics, professors, who, some of whom at least, will say, oh, well, that can't be a serious thing. That's a Christian thing. We're not taking that seriously.
Right.
I'd like to sit them down, tie them up, and say, you're going to read the entire works of Dostoevsky, C.S. Lewis, Thomas Aquinas, Cardinal Newman, and at the end of that, you're going to tell me how stupid you think Christians are.
Well said again. Well said. All right, I'll finish with this. There was a couple of comments I saw in your National Post. You know, I said this earlier to you, Andy. If you want to find out the depravity of humanity these days and how dysfunctional we really are, just go to the comment section of any article online or any YouTube video.
Yep.
And you're not going to get 10 comments into it before you start seeing someone fighting or ripping someone. And, So here's a couple of comments that came off the National Post after their blurb on this book. What's it called? Look at Heresy. As good as most of us think a secular democracy is, I think even Korn would prefer a secular democracy to a theocracy, even a democratic theocracy. And just to remind people, secularism is the idea that everyone is equal, with no special privilege for anyone based upon belief or lack of belief. It's a basic statement of equality. Your reaction?
Well, I mean, that's very anti-intellectual. Actually, secularism is a specific ideology that says that secularism is better than Christianity. Thus, it can't be about equality. But it's a straw man, too. I don't believe in a theocracy. I certainly don't believe in it. The only theocracies today are Islamic theocracies. All I want is a country and a Western world, a world where Christianity is given the same respect as anyone else, not more, but not less. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Okay, final one. Secularists are true supporters of freedom. That's why I find it so amazing that the religious fanatics pretend we are against freedom while they simultaneously deny freedoms to women, homosexuals, other cultures, or religions. Mm. Secular humanists support equality for all. Oftentimes, secular humanists stand up for the rights of Christians when they are treated unfairly. For example, the t-shirt guy on the East Coast. And they also stand up for the rights of gays when they are treated unfairly.
Well, look at the language there, religious fanatics. This person, in their pursuit of fairness, immediately marginalizes Christians by calling them fanatics. Where do I start on that? Freedom for women and for gays. I want everybody to be free. I'm not taking anyone's freedom away. To say that gay people can't marry, gay people can be married, they just can't marry other people of the same gender. To say that's not an issue of freedom, that's defending marriage. I would defend to the death the right of a gay person to be gay, but I would also defend to the death, if necessary, the preservation of marriage being what it is, one man and one woman. He's probably talking about abortion there. They often do. I'm sorry, a child in the womb at the point of conception is unique with a totally distinct DNA and genomic character. It has a right to be born, and most of the victims, by the way, of abortion in the womb are female, handicapped, and of color. I stand up for those groups. That makes me, if anything, a progressive.
Michael Korn takes on and debunks 10 great myths about Christianity, that it supports slavery, is racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-intellectual, anti-Semitic, provokes war, resists progress, and is repressive and irrelevant. But they have great bake sales. I really appreciate your time. Always do, Michael. Thank you.
Such a great pleasure. I'm glad you're on the radio. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, moving along. Was that one all right for you, Andy?
Go Spurs. I'm a new Tottenham Spurs fan now.
Really?
Yeah. No, that was a great interview. And, Drew, I think you got some kudos from Michael Korn, which I don't think is an easy thing to do.
It's not an easy thing to do.
So, well done, pal.
Yeah, I feel I can sleep tonight after I have a pint. We'll be right back.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?